All four of these candidates are incumbents, with Mr. Weiser, Dr. Frontier, and Pamela Handrow having been previously elected to the board, and Mr. Coates appointed to the board this past December. Is that right, John?
Yes, back in September.
September? Okay. Okay. These two candidates for the District 2 and 3 will be voted on in the April 5th general election. The top vote getter for each district in the April 5th election will take a seat on the Racine Unified School Board later in April. Welcome District 2 candidates John Coates and Dennis Weiser, and District 3 candidates Michael Frontier and Pamela Handrow to Education Matters. 2 points before we get started. I want to thank each of you for making yourselves available to sit on Racine Unified's 9-member school board. As a former Racine Unified school board member, I have a real sense of the commitment each of you are making as school board members. And two, I will interview the Racine Unified school board candidates for District 6 and 7 next Saturday on Education Matters. Before we get started with our introductions and so forth, let's describe the two districts that you represent. And first of all, Michael Frontier, District 3, describe that briefly for our listeners.
Thank you, Duane. Pam and I, our district is on the south side of town. It runs roughly from 11th Street and across to Washington Avenue on the north. On the east, of course, Lake Michigan. Then down in the south, Durand is a major border with 24th Street closer to the lake. And on the west, Cleveland Avenue near St. Edwards, and then down a little further south, Taylor Avenue. So it's a rough rectangle on the south side of our town.
Okay, that's District 3. Now District 2, John?
Yeah, Dennis and I are both looking to represent District 2 that goes from roughly Lake Michigan west to Highway 31, and then from the Kenosha-Racine County line north up to Highway 11. So it encompasses really the southern portion of Mount Pleasant, Elmwood Park, and portions of Racine.
Okay, thank you both for that background information. And I'm sure that the Journal Times will be having maps in the paper as we get closer to the election on April the 5th. At least I sure hope they do.
They're also available on Unified's website.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so people can go to Unified's website and find it there. Okay, each candidate will have up to 1.5 minutes for an opening statement and 1.5 minute for a closing statement. In the remainder of this program, I will be asking the questions. So, that our listeners will begin to know you, give us your name, a brief summary of your background in terms of education and work experience, and tell us why you should be elected to represent your district on the Racine Unified School Board. And so let's start out then with our District 2 candidates, John Coates, first of all, and then we'll followed by Dennis Weiser. John?
Thank you, Duane. I appreciate you and your listeners having us here this morning. And it's always an honor to talk about the district. My background educationally, I have a master's degree in business administration, a master's in engineering, spent the first 11 years of my career as an Army officer, and the last 20 years roughly here in Racine in a variety of marketing, engineering, general management jobs, and now I'm the president of Joy Global Surface Mining. I'm a resident, taxpayer, business leader, and parent of two Racine Unified graduates. I've seen the potential and the opportunities that Unified can offer our students to not only be career and college ready, but to really excel. I'm running for the board to accelerate the improvement in student achievement, ensure safe learning environments, work to partner with our communities, parents, residents, and educators in a fiscally responsible manner. I think the challenges in front of us require diverse community professionals to lead, to develop strategy, and to govern in the district in what's one of the largest enterprises in our county. My experience in driving business growth and as a resident, taxpayer, parent, and board experience really enables me to lead and collaborate to accelerate some of that growth. So thanks for having me here this morning.
Okay. Thank you, John Coates. And then our second candidate from District 2 then is Dennis Weiser. Dennis?
I also would like to thank WGTD for providing us the airtime to reach out to the public like this, and especially thank Duane Olson. He puts a lot of work organizing these events, and everybody benefits from these. I am originally from Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. I came here about 40 years ago as an intern teacher. I like the community. I like the schools. I like the people, and I stuck around.
Yes.
I have a bachelor's degree in mathematics, a master's degree in education, and I've been involved with the school district in one form or another for at least 40 years. This school district has a lot of potentials. We have lots of areas where we're immensely successful. where we are having problems. Many of the problems go back to the issue of poverty in the community. We're seeing lost 20,000 jobs over the last 30 years. That has a huge impact on the home lives of children. Many students come to school without the same advantages as others. It's our job to put everybody on a level playing field and turn out the best students we can, fully prepared for a career.
Okay, thank you. Those then were the two candidates then for District 2, John Coates and Dennis Weiser. Now to District 3, Michael Frontier.
Thank you again, Wayne, for your good work in our community. My master's degree is in early childhood education, and I have a doctorate in urban education from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Ann and I moved here in 1968, and our three children all attended Racine schools. Racine is on the rise. Our graduation rate is increasing. Our numbers are, despite some tough demographics, as Dennis alluded to, in terms of unemployment and also educational attainment of some of the adults in our community, we're seeing our crime rate go down. So the many pluses occurring. As we move forward with our educational initiatives, we are riding the crest of great support from our citizenry for a referendum. So we have a responsibility to steward this money in very positive directions and take the trust that the community is giving us and turn this into an outstanding Beacon school system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike Frontier. Now our second candidate from District 3, Pamela Handrow. And by the way, all of these people are incumbents, which is makes it really very interesting, too, in that respect. But also, it provides an extensive background, then, in terms of understanding the district and what we're doing. Okay, Pamela Handrow, District, then, number 3.
And, of course, I thank you also for the opportunity to be here today. I moved to Racine in 1973, sort of like Dennis. I came here for my first job out of college. I had a degree in sociology from UW-Stevens Point and worked for Taylor Home in their group home. While I was there, I obtained a master's degree in counseling and human services administration. And subsequent to that, I decided to take on a career as a lawyer and obtained a law degree from Chicago Kent College of Law. And I loved research so much that after that, I got a master's degree in library and information science. I've worked in the community for all of that time, including an 8-year stint as a senior lecturer at UW-Parkside, teaching what else but interdisciplinary studies. Mm-hmm. I presently am kind of transitioning between two jobs. I'm the executive director at Bethany Apartments, which serves victims of domestic violence. And I'm also serving as executive director at Safe Haven of Racine, who serves abused, neglected, and homeless youth. Through my work in the community, I've seen the importance of a quality education. Many of the marginalized individuals I serve have not had that opportunity or taken advantage of it. I would like to continue to serve on the board because, as Mike has said, I think we're making some strides and closing some gaps and showing improvement with our students, and I would like to obtain my seat so that I can continue to work in that regard.
Okay, thank you, Pamela Handrow. Then the two candidates then from District 3, Michael Frontier and Pamela Handrow. Now we'll go on to questions then facing all of our candidates here. And I think I will start then with District 3 since we started the introductions with District 2. So, John, then we'll start with you. Well, I guess we'll start with Dennis then because
we're
District 2, I'm sorry. And let's see. I want to start with District 3, okay, because I started with you people first and so on. Okay, so District 3 then, first question. There are plans underway to change the high school curriculum next year to focus on career academies to better prepare students for the world of work as well as higher education. As a result, the plan is that Racine's high schools will move to block scheduling next school year with a 1.5-hour classes as opposed to 50-minute classes under the current schedule. However, the Racine Education Association and other concerned citizens feel this shift to block scheduling should be delayed a year so that teachers will have more time to prepare their curricula for the extended class periods under block scheduling. So what are your thoughts on this issue, and how should this issue be handled? Is there a middle ground somewhere? Mike, we'll start with you.
Thank you. block scheduling has a lot of promise. I've talked to teachers in other districts, and many of them swear by it. It was a change that they in some cases resisted but embraced, and it offers many pluses. It's a chance to get to know students better. You have them for a longer time. There's a chance for, in a sense, homework could be on one day, maybe you have your science class, and the next day you won't have that. So at night you'd have four classes for homework rather than the shuffling around, the movement in the building. There are many pluses. In addition, there's more opportunity to provide arts to our students and for our students to achieve more credits. And as we move into a future that's going to perhaps have less time for there'll be less work, perhaps a shorter work week. We need to develop the arts in our students so they have a more productive life. So there are many pluses to the schedule. Obviously, this needs to be done well. Our district is going to provide 4 days for our teachers, and I've asked the question if that's sufficient. Other districts around the state, Green Bay, for example, have done extensive visiting of other districts and provided considerable input from staff. That has not been the case here, although I think there's been efforts to secure that. So the underlying issue, again, is we can't do things by fiat. We can't run the district by policy. We need to engage our teachers more, and I'm hoping there will be more windows for engagement. There's also another downside to this. If you could, there could be less teaching jobs. So we have to assure the teaching community that we're going to respect that the workforce.
Okay. Pamela Handrow.
Well, I think Mike pointed out many of the advantages of the block scheduling. I was fortunate to go to Nashville last year to visit the Academies of Nashville, and they are a project of Ford Next Generation Learning. And one of the reasons that the block scheduling subject has come up is that has been determined that it's imperative to do the academies using block scheduling because of the various kinds of opportunities that will be provided to students. Part of that is that there will be development of internships and job opportunities and a variety of other things, and as Mike pointed out, a whole host of other opportunities for students. It also allows for planning time for teachers and some collaborative efforts to provide a curriculum that's career focused and looks at the career from all aspects. As far as block scheduling, I know that it is a different situation to teach in longer formats, but as Mike indicated, there is, the opportunity to develop relationships with students, and relationships are ultimately important in student success. Many of our youth do not have those kinds of opportunities to form relationships. Do we have time between now and next year to do it well? I guess that is debatable. It's my understanding that because we are part of Ford Next Generation Learning, there will be support and input from them in this regard. We do need to do it well, but I think we can get started, and with ongoing support and professional development, I'm hoping that it can be done and it can be done well, because I think it is important that we launch the academies and we do it right from the beginning.
Okay, same question with our District 2 candidates then, John Coates.
Okay, well, as already mentioned, I think the academies we're seeing offer a significant step forward for us in career and college readiness for our students. We've already seen improvements coming in the high schools with the highest increase in graduation rates in the state last year, and as well recently that more than 90% of our freshmen are on track with credits. The academies can help us go even further. Block scheduling, as has been mentioned, is a key component of that, especially as you look at project-based and cross-curricular team learning. And I've seen that in other districts in the state through work with the Workforce Investment Board. But that is said, there's three probably key indicators that I'm looking for as the board continues to evaluate this with the district over the next month or so. Number one, obviously, you've already mentioned the teacher readiness. Have we given them the professional development and the planning time to get those curriculum changes done and to be building these project-based exercises with community and business partners? Secondly, the scheduling. Can our students actually build schedules, get the class requirements they need, and do we have the transportation plan put together for that? And then thirdly, our readiness for special education. We have to remember that our mandate is to educate all students. A very important part of that is our IEPs and making sure that the students are going to get the proper time, support, and assistance as we move from 50-minute to 90-minute schedules. The district's working on that, but we need to see these three indicators to know that, yeah, we're ready to go forward right now, or do we need to delay in certain areas or aspects to make this an effective progressive change.
Okay, thank you, John Coates. Dennis Weiser, then.
The switch to a block schedule is a major transition for the high school teaching staffs. Every teacher will have to rewrite every single lesson in every single course, and that is very time-consuming. We need to make this transition as smooth as possible, as comfortable as possible, so we aren't overly burdening our teachers with the transition so they can focus more on the performance of the students. As a supervisor of student teachers for Parkside several years ago, in other communities, I monitored student teachers teaching under block schedules, and I would have to say in every single instance I saw it being done badly. Badly with a block schedule means a 90-minute lecture or a 45-minute lecture followed by a 45-minute study hall. This new schedule has the potential to be much more productive than this. Case High School, for instance, has been using a block schedule for the algebra classes, and the performance results there are absolutely staggering. So it is very important for us to do this as well as possible. Timing of this decision is not a matter of this year or next year. It's a matter of when is the staff ready, when are the materials in place, and have we done everything we can to support the transition. And that matches up pretty much with what John's expectations were also. We need to do this as well as possible. If we can get every high school teacher off to a good start with the block schedule, whether it's this year or next year, the benefits will be immense to the students and the community.
Okay, thanks to all four of you. Now, I had thought that we would limit the time then for each of the questions to a minute, and you go both, all four of you, then pushed it close, I think, to a minute and a half to 2 minutes, which is fine, because this really is a basic issue then as far as the district is concerned, which I think is well. But let's try to go to the one-minute limit then as we move forward here. Okay, let's then go on to the next question. It's a follow-up then on block scheduling. One of my concerns about the shift to block scheduling is that high school teachers will teach one more class, meaning at least 25 more students to instruct, evaluate, grade, and so forth each semester. As a result, some teachers who are currently involved in enrichment and extracurricular activities for students are dropping those activities and thus reducing the enrichment experience students can have. At least that would seem to be, unless others pick it up. What can or should be done to save these important learning activities? And we'll start, I guess, then with Dennis on this one.
Well, this issue of losing classes, losing enrichment, actually goes a step further. Right now, our high schools, in many instances, have what they call interventions. If a student is having problems in a class during a study hall, they will work with that student to make sure that they're up to pace, learning everything as they should. And if we lose the study halls to an extra class, we lose the ability to have interventions, which is a big price to pay, just as it would be a big price for students to lose these enrichment classes also. My thoughts on this is that we have to be flexible on how we implement it. We can't just draw the line in the sand and say September 1, here's how we're doing it and not changing it. We have to see what's working and what's not working and be prepared to modify it on the fly if there are things that aren't going as well as they should be for the students or the staff.
Okay, then John Coates, then the second candidate for District 2.
Yeah, and this is actually a really important issue that it came up at our last board meeting where there was concern that we were going to lose art classes.
Yes.
And fortunately, the district's already been looking at that and talked to us as a board about the fact that because of the way the lunches are structured, it's not 90 minutes, they'll actually be able to have additional time for some of the course enrichment activities. But the extracurricular is a concern as well. And I think that's where I mentioned before, the scheduling and the professional development. We need our teachers and educators and assistants all involved in the planning so that we can understand what are those issues at risk, how are we going to overcome and address those in this, but also looking to other districts. Just as the board had a chance to go and see some other districts doing this, we need to be showing or allowing our teachers to see what are those examples of how does this happen in other places? What does success look like so that we can build that here and be ready?
Okay, thank you so much. Now we move on to the two candidates for District 3, and we'll start with Pamela Handrow.
Well, I agree with, you know, the fact that students need to be taught as whole individuals. And I think to graduate students who are career and college ready also means that they need to have a well-rounded background, and they need to have exposure to some of the things that come through art classes and enrichment classes, because without those, they're not going to have that exposure. Often, especially our students who live in poverty, do not have those opportunities at other junctures in their lives. As John indicated, there was some discussion of the matter of art classes, and there was, you know, some thought that perhaps students would have more opportunities in that regard. But again, as Dennis said, this needs to be a work in progress. If we go to the career academies, certainly people who work within fields certainly need to have other exposures. I would hope that students still have opportunities and that teachers are, you know, given the opportunity to teach some of those things that are near and dear to them and that serve a purpose in fulfilling their reasons for teaching.
Okay, and finally on this question, Mike Frontier.
So, Duane, if I understand the question, you're saying because of the workload involved in block scheduling, teachers are going to decline to do extra.
Well, at least this one teacher that I know, and okay. I regard her as a very skilled teacher. Maybe she's overextended, too, in terms of these things. But she's decided to drop these things.
I understand. And this is a big transition. I'm sure teachers want to put a lot of time into preparing for this. So, as has been mentioned by my colleagues here on the board, you know, the arts are powerful. Some of these classes, after school drama, debate, are the reasons kids come to school. Mm-hmm. So if we see a decline in teachers who are at schools now willing to offer these, we should still offer them in a broader sense to people, perhaps people in community, retired teachers would like to come back and provide these. Because these heart issues, issues where our kids are engaged and motivated to learn are we can't afford to lose these. They engage our kids, and that's what education is ultimately all about, creating passionate learners.
Okay. Thank you so much, then, on all four of you on that question. Let's move on to the next question, and then we'll start with the District 3 people then on this one. When the new Knapp Elementary School is opened in fall 2016, it will be a community school. That is, a school that provides supplementary social services to its students, their families, and the neighborhood in which they are located. Given the extent of poverty in Racine Unified, should more elementary schools become community schools? How should this be funded? And that sort of thing. So I guess we'll start with you, Mike, I guess.
Well, thank you. I think this is an exciting opportunity. I went to a conference with some teachers from the district in Chicago, and community schools was the heart of this. And clearly, in a community such as ours, where we have a low attainment of educational practice, if you will, among many of our families, an opportunity for parents to have classes at a neighborhood school, for their kids to get medical counseling or dental care in the neighborhood. This is a powerful idea, which I know our United Way has embraced. That, yes, I think we definitely need to move towards a model of this kind, where our neighborhoods are invigorated by this kind of engagement. And finally, I think it's the neighborhood, ultimately, where we're going to have to see democracy grow. We're in a country now where people are feeling disaffected. Perhaps we're lucky if 50% of our people vote. We need to engage people at the local level to see they have a say in creating their schools and their neighborhoods and ultimately their community. And neighborhood school is a vehicle to do that.
Okay, thank you, Mike. And then Pamela Handrow, then the second candidate for District 3. Pamela?
I'm very excited to have the opportunity to observe the launch of the first community school at Knapp, and it's a great situation in that we're not only building a new school, but we're building it for this purpose, and fortunately we have some referendum dollars to permit for the space in that regard. The United Way has embraced this as a national initiative, and Racine is fortunate to have a United Way president who is clearly interested in this. And one of the focuses of the United Way at this point in time is clearly education. So as far as funding for it, the United Way already funds many of the organizations who are going to be providing services within those buildings. And so I think it's a way for the community to become even more involved and for resources to get to the people and find people where they are. Should we develop more of these? Absolutely. I think the more we could do this, the better our whole community would be.
Okay, thank you, Pamela Handro. Then we move on to the two candidates then for District 2, John Coates.
Okay, very similar to what Mike and Pam have mentioned, I agree that this is a very exciting development for us, not only from the funding streams, but also for the community, because we're engaging families. And a lot of these families, the parents may not have had a relationship with schools, a relationship with education, that this gives an opportunity to connect with the entire family and build a real community partnership there. I'd agree with what Pam and Mike have said. I think there's great opportunities leveraging what the United Way has done, but I think we can do more with, if we have a successful pilot here at NAP and we expand this program, getting business partners involved too and other community organizations. We can't just rely on the United Way. We need to be drawing business in to grow economic development in the county, and then bring them on as partners to fund these initiatives to build the community and tie the families together. Family strength will give us success in overcoming poverty and building education and getting student achievement going forward.
Okay, thank you, John. And finally then on this question, Dennis Weiser, District 2.
With over half of our students living in poverty at this point in time, there is absolutely a need for community schools such as NAP. Beloit has been doing something similar to this for many, many years. It's been highly successful. It builds a positive connection between the students and the school, between the parents and the school. Everybody benefits from that. If we do it at NAP and it turns out to be as successful as I anticipate, I think we are obligated to provide it at other schools. Students' access to resources such as this should not be limited by where they happen to live. The funding for it, maintaining these on an ongoing basis, the costs will fall on some of the social service agencies. They will be staffing these, not Unified employees. They will be providing the resources. Our role is to provide space in the buildings, and as Pam indicated, we do have referendum money available, and I can't imagine a better use for that money than setting up more community schools.
Okay, thank you, Dennis Weiser. Now then, we move on to the next question. If elected, what would be the single policy initiative that you would work hardest on to advance? And I guess we'll start then with Dennis. We'll start with you then.
This is going back to something I've mentioned a couple times already. Poverty has had a huge impact on the students in our community. Depending upon your background at home before you come to school, some students arrive with as much as twice the vocabulary as other students. That makes a huge difference in how the students fare in school. The district has to focus every effort it can on the kids in K-4 and regular kindergarten to make sure they level the playing field as much as possible. If we can't get them on a level playing field in the early years, it's never going to be achieved further on down the road. So we will have to step up our efforts in the early years of instruction. We'll have to step up the engagement of other agencies, because some of this lies beyond the scope of what the district can deal with. But it's critical to get these problems addressed at an early age.
Okay, and John Coates?
Well, obviously, everything we do is first and foremost focused on student achievement. One of the things that I actually think there's two things that I want to see the board focus on as we go forward. Number one, we need a long-term strategic plan for the district so that the board is in front of the administration and addressing, just as Dennis mentioned, early childhood and poverty. We need a plan that focuses on where are we going with programs, where are we going with facilities, where are we going with funding over the 10-year stretch so that we don't outrun the district doesn't outrun the board. And along with that, we've got to address the looming financial deficit. With all the changing demographics, state and federal funding changes almost monthly these days, but the great opportunities in front of us to address achievement and poverty and accomplishment in the district, we've got a sustainable model that will improve the district without increasing the overall tax burden. And the board's got to take that on this year.
Okay, thank you ever so much, the two candidates sent for District 2, Dennis Weiser and John Coates. Let's move on then to the candidates for District 3, and we'll start then with Pamela.
Well, Dennis kind of stole some of my thunder, but I've been a strong advocate for early childhood education due to a lot of reasons and some of the work I've done in the past. And as Dennis indicated, the K-4 is important, but actually that's almost too late. We need to engage kids at an even earlier age. And as Dennis indicated, we need to call upon the community to assist in this regard. We are not mandated to serve children who are birth to three, but certainly that is where, especially in a community where there's a great deal of poverty and there's a great deal of need for special education, that we need to work with our community and to continue to partner with them. So I would say every emphasis that we can make to engage the community and to bolster our 4K students and our early childhood efforts, I think, is of the utmost importance at this point in time.
Thank you, Pamela Handro. And finally on this question, Mike Frontier.
Thank you. Well, at the heart of our budget shortfall lies the fact that we're losing students to other schools and the voucher money that takes from our budget. And the superintendent recently conducted a community survey, and it indicated that learning climate concerns are seen as the most significant issue of all for our community at large. There is a perception that misbehavior on the part of some students is minimizing learning for others. The administration is implementing several cutting-edge interventions to address this concern. The board needs to build into its evaluation stronger, clearer markers that assess learning climate. These markers can indicate over time if behavior is improving, as we feel it is, so we can honestly counter negative perceptions, which will always be there. Therefore, the most critical change the board should pursue is to more intentionally assess the many efforts underway to improve learning climate. What we measure, we treasure.
Okay, thank you on that question to all four of you. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Wayne Olson, and you're listening to a special edition of Education Matters, in which I am interviewing the two candidates for the District 2 seat on the Racine Unified School Board, John Coates and Dennis Weiser, and the two candidates for the District 3 seat, Michael Frontier and Pamela Handro, in the April 5th general election. Now to the next question. Then the question is, recently there have been efforts on the part of some residents of Caledonia and Sturtevant to withdraw from Racine Unified and form their own school district. How do you respond to that effort? And I guess then we'll start then with Pamela.
Okay, actually, I strongly believe that a unified district serves a great purpose, and I think it's a way to best use the resources that are available. Adding additional districts adds additional overhead. It will require different building of buildings, and I really think that there is far more opportunities in a larger district for offering diverse programming and serving the needs of all students. I would hope that the other communities are beginning to see that Racine Unified is making strides in trying to address some of the issues that are of concern to them. Michael just mentioned one of those things, student learning environments, and a variety of other things. But I am hopeful that we can remain as one district and that we can give parents and students choice within our district by developing interesting opportunities for students and parents in various kinds of choice schools within the district, such as we already have some great examples, such as Walden, Fine Arts, Jefferson Lighthouse. So I would hope we could stay together.
Okay. Mike Frontier.
I would not support these separations. In 1976, Sister Brenda Walsh, one of our community heroes, really, led Town Meeting 76, which assessed the community about issues. And the number one issue then was the divide by the interstate. These divides are creeping closer now, but I think there's a growing realization across Sturtevant, Mount Pleasant, and Caledonia that we sink or swim together. RUSD has imposed change on these communities in the past without garnering any input from them. For example, in Sturtevant, school boundaries using Highway 11 as a divider sent children from this small community to different schools. Superintendent Hawes and the board's legislative committee, led by Julie McKenna, have begun to work to meet and listen to the concerns of these municipalities. Just as we must work more closely with the teachers, the greatness of the larger Racine community rests on how well we can work together.
Okay, thank you, two candidates, Mike Frontier and Pamela Andrew, District 3. Now the two candidates from District 2, then we'll start with John.
Okay, and just as has been mentioned, I think we're stronger together. A larger unified district offers breadth and depth and opportunities that several smaller districts wouldn't. Things like early child education, special education, IB programs, the academies of Racine, AP programs, and so on, can only really happen in a unified district with those resources. We need career and college-ready students for all of our population, all of our students across the community. I think some of the desire to break away was also born out of what you heard the other candidates talk about, the lack of engagement with those communities. And I think that's incredibly important for us, that we've got to be regularly engaged with the communities, their elected leaders, to make sure that we're discussing, reviewing, and aligning on our goals from an elected leadership body in the community, elected leadership body for the board, to make sure we're tied together. We've started doing some of that this past fall. We've got to do much more of that. I want to see us do that on a regular cadence so that every quarter we're together with every one of those communities, and it becomes really a monthly cadence for us as a board interacting with those communities. So we're all pointed in the same direction for all of our students.
Makes me think of communicate, communicate, communicate.
Exactly.
So, and finally, Dennis Weiser on this question.
As several of us have indicated several times, the main challenge we are facing in the district is the fallout from poverty. Changing the boundaries doesn't make poverty disappear from the face of the earth. It might make it someone else's problem, but it does ultimately not resolve that problem. So redistricting is not going to be the answer to everyone's problems. Julie McKenna has done an excellent job with her legislative committee setting up meetings with the villages and such, so there's communication back and forth. We need to maintain that communication so everyone's issues are heard and the board has a reasonable chance of addressing these issues if it's possible. Ironically, 15 years ago, there was only one board member from the city of Racine. Eight were from the outlying villages, and it really didn't change the direction of the district. The problems we have are going to be the same problems, whether it's one big district or half a dozen little ones. As John indicated, the resourcing is much simpler if you have a large district.
Okay, thank you all on that question, and looks like this will probably be our last question given the time that we have. What is there to attract a highly qualified young person to teach in the Racine Unified School District? What can or should be done to make Unified a more attractive school district for these highly qualified young teachers? And so we'll start with you then, John, I guess.
Okay, and I'll share just from coming from a business perspective, young graduates are looking for opportunity, engagement, and excitement. They want to know that what they're doing matters and makes a difference. So we've got to make sure that we're providing them safe, exciting learning environments. Some of the things we've done recently with the investment in the new schools is certainly a plus. The one-to-one technology program, providing students with tablets to help them engage interactively in learning, is going to attract younger teachers as well. They're going to be very comfortable with that and be able to help build some of that curriculum. But we've also got to make sure that we've got a working environment and working relationships that are strong. The district's embarking on some employee surveys, student surveys, and parent surveys in the coming months that are going to be really helpful for us to make sure we're engaged and that the district's responding to the needs of those teachers. We absolutely need to bring new talent in, and we've got to make sure then we can retain those new teachers.
Okay, and I due to time then, where I'd ask the rest of you then to do it about in 30 seconds and answer this question. So, Dennis, we'll go to you.
Okay, real quick then. In order to draw teachers into teaching and not other careers, we have to offer competitive benefit packages so the teachers can afford to be in our community. In order to draw to our schools as opposed to other school districts, they have to have the resources so they can go home feeling like they've had a reasonable shot at fixing the problems they're confronted with.
Okay, Mike Frontier, District 3.
Well, Rockford, Illinois has embarked on an effort to transform their community, and their educational efforts are working hand in glove with an effort to raise the profile of that city so by 2025 it'll be a city where their kids will want to come back and live. Racine is also embarking on this effort. We not only need to raise the level of excellence in our school, we need to make Racine an outstanding community to live in.
Okay, and finally on this question then, Pamela Handrow.
I absolutely agree that to attract new talent, and we need to offer competitive salaries, certainly, but I don't think many young people are all that much interested in money as the only factor. We need to demonstrate that Racine Unified is on the move and that there will be opportunities to engage in best practices and using technology and all of the things available to everyone else.
Okay, time now then for your closing statements, and again, 20 to 30 seconds because of time that we have. And so, Mike, I guess we'll start with you.
Well, research on learning is dramatically changing the face of Education Day. The key word is student engagement. The passivity of our classrooms that we experienced in the past is giving way to techniques that honor the individual learning student. 15 years ago when I was a principal evaluating teachers, we just looked at the teacher. Now the focus of the evaluation is watching the student. How is she or he engaged in growing as a passionate learner? As a school board member, all our energy should be directed at measures that sharpen the focus on student learning. For example, considerable research tells us that later starting times, more sleep for high school kids could improve learning outcomes. Will we have the courage to change schedules to honor this research? Just as we must support groundbreaking efforts to engage students, the school board needs to be sensitive to the community that supports these students. I would advocate then listening sessions led by school board members, which can result in input and greater trust for the community, which has recently trusted us with a $130 million referendum.
Okay, 15 seconds each.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I believe that Racine Unified must continue to serve our students. The only thing that's going to save our community is a high quality educational system. We cannot fail our students, and I think we're on the path to improving our outcomes, and we need to continue with that.
John?
I'm running for the board to make sure that we continue accelerating improvement and achievement, safe learning environments, and collaborate with our community. We've got the experience in driving growth in business and in leading and collaborating for mutual success. I'm looking forward to Unified becoming a program of choice for families throughout the Southeast Wisconsin area.
Okay, and finally, Dennis Weiser.
Our school system is critical to the future of this entire community. We cannot stop short in supporting it. I believe that my 40 years experience with the school district, combined with my city council and library board governance experience, puts me in a good position to help this district realize its full potential.
Okay, to our radio audience, this is your host, Wayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today for this edition of Education Matters, in which I interviewed the two candidates for the District 2 seat on the Racine Unified School Board and the two candidates for the District 3 seat on the Unified School Board. The election takes place now on April 5th. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for the next edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Wayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
The following debate between the two Kenosha mayoral candidates in the April 5th election occurred Thursday, March 3rd.
Hello, I'm Len Iquinta, and this is the Kenosha Spring Election Candidates Forum for the Office of Mayor of Kenosha. The rules for the forum are simple. Candidates will be asked questions by me. The questions are of my own choosing and were not shared with anyone in advance of this event. Thank you to all who submitted questions for consideration, including many of the candidates. The order of speaking was determined by a coin toss conducted by me in public just before the start of this broadcast. We have an audience here at Gateway Technical College in the WGTD studio. They may also submit questions in writing, which will be collected by staff and forwarded to me. The audience has been asked to keep silence to save time and in the interests of fairness to all. This forum is co-sponsored by Kenosha Community Media and WGTD Public Radio for Southeastern Wisconsin. Both organizations will be providing recordings of this event on their digital pages. See their websites for details. And now to the mayoral candidates for Kenosha. The candidates are John Antaramian and Bob Johnson. John won the coin toss, and I will read his bio first, and then he will give an opening statement. I will also read Bob Johnson's bio. At the same time, he will give the second opening statement. They will continue talking for about 40 minutes as we ask questions, and at the conclusion, we will ask each candidate to make a one-minute closing statement. So, to begin.